President, senior fellow at the Arab Center in Washington, D.C. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Taracena, Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Puberty is when you grow into your adult body, usually between 8 and 14 years old. All that growing brings changes that may make you feel scared, confused, excited, or all of the above. It's all good. You're just maturing. Puberty is a process that lasts years, hits differently for everybody, and can last till you're around 20. So how do the changes show up? You may get pimples, mostly on your face, but on your body too. Hair. The hair you have on your arms and legs may get thicker and darker, and you'll likely grow hair in new places, like your face, armpits, chest, and pubic area. Stretch marks are common too, a sign of your adult body taking shape. Physical changes, from body odor to growth spurts, are just part of the puberty story. All kinds of new feelings may come on too, like crushes and being sexually turned on. It's super common to feel like your emotions suddenly turn on and off, sad, angry, or irritated. No matter how you're feeling about all these changes to your body, remember that puberty is a normal part of growing up, and knowing what to expect can help to make it feel a lot less weird or stressful. Want to learn more? Go to PlannedParenthood.org/teens.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, where the time is 6 o'clock. I should also point out that WUSB in Stony Brook can be heard on 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as on the internet at WUSB.FM. All that said, it's 6 o'clock and time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. Thank you. And very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes.
You know, I always knew Vermont was cool. I did. But I didn't realize how cool it was until we went up there for just a day. Had some business to do. It's not important. Don't ask. We're not going to tell you. But the point is, we headed up there, and almost every moment in that state was magical in one way or another. You know, just by exploring, driving around, interacting with the people, seeing the sights, I realized, you know, Vermont is our Canada. It really is, because when you're in Vermont, you don't feel like you're in the States. We were in these towns. You didn't even see chain stores. You saw all kinds of local outlets, all unique, all different. Of course, they closed really, really early. But that's part of the magic, I guess. You know, it's dark at night, quiet, and just very different, relaxed. Everybody just seems much happier. I know a day isn't enough to really measure a place. But listening to the radio, which, by the way, we like to listen to non-commercial radio wherever we go. And sometimes that's college. Sometimes that's NPR. In this case, it was NPR. But just like with Connecticut, they don't say radio anymore. They call it Vermont Public, just like they call it Connecticut Public. It's kind of weird because I guess they're sort of embracing the alternative media that's not necessarily broadcast. And I don't really go along with that because I think radio is something that's really important. And that's what we were listening to was the radio.
I think they try to encompass all mediums around radio, like as like a broader art form mm-hmm. than just audio. In other words, we have the ability to have posts and websites that share stories about the radio or link to other content that is actually video or is a musician that's performing live, like the varied forms that are around that. They're trying to kind of broaden it to this sort of public media instead of just radio.
Well, they don't even say media. You know, they could say Vermont Public Media.
That
might satisfy me, but
it's like a shorthand.
I don't know. Why do you have to try to encompass everything all the time? Why not say what you're talking on? Like, this is a newspaper. You're listening to the radio. You know, that's I'm on television right now. You know, these are things that I think we should celebrate and embrace. And
that's just my impression. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I've noticed that though. This turned into a critique. I meant to be complimenting them. But listening to Vermont Public, they have really good conversations, just like they do on Canadian radio. And it's, I don't know, people just seem really, really laid back all the time. We found ourselves, it's bizarre because we didn't really do any research. We found ourselves in a cemetery. You wouldn't believe what the cemetery was for. It was for defunct flavors of Ben and Jerry's ice cream. Yeah, they have a cemetery on their premises. It's all done pretty tongue-in-cheek, but it's you know, just one of the examples of the sense of humor they have up there.
Yeah, and the other thing that we learned about related to flavors of ice cream was the phenomena of creamies. I'd never had one.
Well, we learned about that on the radio. We were listening to the radio, and they did a one-hour program about creamies. All right, Kyle, what are creamies?
And to my knowledge,
dreamies, too, while you're at it.
It's a sort of soft serve that has a higher milk fat content, and the original creamies, I guess, are maple-flavored in the spirit of Vermont maple syrup, which is a flavor in a lot of different things that you try up there. So, yeah, that was a the point of our mission is to learn about creamies, definitely, obviously.
That was not the point of our mission.
It was, and you just can't admit it. But that was incredible because it's like a soft serve, but it was really heavy. I was holding this, and it was a small ice cream.
It was small, and it was huge.
And I felt like, God, I was lifting a barbell or something.
I mean, people there, they indulge in such amazing things, and they don't seem to pay the price for it.
This might be why they're in good spirits or something. They really indulge in a lot of this particular ice cream and different ways of preparing it. The Dreamy, I believe, is a apple cider donut with some amount of creamy Vermont ice cream, but I'm not sure if that's exactly.
Yeah, we couldn't find those.
We couldn't find those, but there are all these delicacies, shall we say, that crop up around the industry, and dairy and cheeses are, of course, something that the state is known for. So you kind of can't go anywhere without recognizing it.
Everything is farm fresh. That's all they talk about, is farm fresh food. And you know, it's not like the people there are a bunch of hippies. No, they're rugged. They're outdoor people. They're farmers. They drive pickup trucks. Except they're different. They're different than what you might see in, say, Texas. And it's refreshing to see that. It's good to know there's a different way of doing things. It seems to really work. People are able to get access to services, need places to live. You know, they have problems. They were talking about the problems on the radio, and I don't know. It's so close when you think about it. It's not far to get to, but what, 4 or 5 hours driving, or you can get there faster, I think, by train perhaps. Or my phone. My phone is piping up now, and the reason my phone is piping up is because I didn't turn it off, and I'm afraid to turn the volume off, because if I turn the volume off, I might lose what's on the screen, because I don't really know how this damn phone works. And that was emphasized quite handily when we had to do two different things in two different villages. Yeah, it's mysterious, I know. Neither one of us could get reception. It was ridiculous. I mean, we couldn't get data, and we couldn't even get a cell signal. The thing is, I knew I could get a cell signal, but I had to reboot my phone. Now, the geniuses at Samsung recently sent across an update that changed a whole lot of things on the screen, commands, all sorts of things. And one of the things they changed was how you reboot the phone. You used to just hold two buttons down. I eventually did it. I don't know how I did it. I don't. But holding those two buttons down, it just turns down the volume now. It doesn't work the way it used to. So I couldn't even reboot my phone to get the service to work that I needed to use. So the two of us are there practically in tears, just trying to get one of our phones to get a signal, which we knew was there. But it was just insane that it was so difficult for us to do that.
I had to hop on some Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Wi-Fi is great.
It was embarrassing.
But when you don't have the Wi-Fi, you have to like sit outside stores and things like that and hop onto their signal. But eventually, I don't know what I did. It was a combination of buttons. There's three buttons there, and I don't know which ones I hit. I couldn't do it again, not quickly anyway. But I was able to reboot the phone, and of course, the signal came right up, and I was able to communicate that way. It was not only was there a phone signal, there was a 5G signal. So, yeah.
Oh, I hear that's the best.
Yeah, technology sometimes really kicks you. But the place itself, though, absolutely amazing. I can't recommend it enough. I just feel healthier just having gone there.
Yeah, it was great to explore. I encourage people to explore some places around you and get out there, be open and observe what's going on, what mm-hmm. What people's lifestyles are like, how different it might be just right across the state or across a county line. You can't believe just how much culture, how much interesting stuff's going on, and it might give you some ideas and help you I don't know, feel a little bit refreshed or feel a little bit of a enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. You come back with some ideas, you come back with some of that energy from another place that has a lot going on, has a lot of interesting productive stuff, you know, just all kinds of building and living.
You don't have to go far. You don't have to even cross the county. I mean, you know, right in your back is Selden. Selden's a fascinating place. Mm-hmm. Visit Selden or Sound Beach. You know, these are places that they all have history. They all have stories to tell.
Well, it's interesting to see the history, too. A lot of times, if you follow main roadways, they'll usually parallel train tracks. You can check out some of the train stations and realize, okay, this train station may be for Amtrak or something, but it's actually part of an older network and was itself independent at one time. And there's a lot of history with a lot of those structures and small stations and post offices everywhere. You get a real sense of the pace of life when you check out some of those spots where people access the national networks. And there's also this new even faster Amtrak train. I think we're still trying to find it. It's so fast.
Is it real? If you're referring to the new Acela, I have bad news for you. It's not actually faster. Somehow they wound up making it slower. They say it's temporary, but come on, Amtrak, for God's sake, if you're going to put this much into debuting a new train, at least make it a little bit faster. It looks nice. I'll say that. It looks really nice, but it's, I know there's a lot of curves. I know, you know, the infrastructure isn't what it should be. But, we can do better than that. We can really, really do better. Vermont. That was a fun little side trip. You know, we're thinking of going to New Haven in Connecticut. They supposedly have pizza that rivals New York. And I will believe that when I taste it. But you can just hop on a ferry, hop on a train, then you're in New Haven. Check out Yale and
find out for yourself.
Find out for yourself, exactly. So these things are all within reach.
It's the Connecticut pizza all that's cracked up to be.
Yeah, yeah.
We will find out.
We will find out. We will find out for sure.
So what else is going on? What do you got?
Well, let's see. We got a letter to the editor in the local newspaper, the Village Times, Herald Beacon, whatever other name they call themselves. This is all about our esteemed representative, Nick LaLota. We've talked about him many, many times in glowing terms, the glow being the fire of the pit of hell that he guards. This person wrote a letter saying they received a letter regarding his refusal to hold in-person town halls. He said, "I don't do political theatrics." Town halls are not theatrics. Since 1633, it's been a physical place where townspeople and politicians meet to hear topics of interest or to discuss specific legislation. They afford active political debate about what constituents like or dislike about her or his votes. The debate may become lively, but that is part of the job. Now, Nick LaLota says his door remains open. What good is an open door to an empty office? It seems as if we never get an answer from him, be it surveys he promised to publish or to inquiries on his Facebook page, as if that's enough. Radio appearances deny his constituents the give and take they require. We deserve better than screen questions and scripted answers. Hey, haven't you heard? Nick LaLota lives in the Soviet Union, because that is the way things are being run right now. Very controlled. Very, very controlled and manipulated. We also see that he meets with small groups that are never advertised on his congressional Facebook page so that people like us can attend. He needs to meet with working families at night, not for a rare or occasional photo op, but on a regular basis to listen and truly hear what is being said. He says he's bothered by those confronting him with inconvenient truths and posters outside his office. Thomas Paine's words of centuries ago once again ring true. These are the times that try men's souls. Indeed, Nick LaLota is in hiding in Amityville. Yeah, that's right. He lives in Amityville, outside the district. He doesn't even live in the district. Does he support a presidency that is closer to George III than George Washington? Come meet us. Show us responsibility. And that amazing letter from Carol Bond, who wrote to the local newspaper. And I think that echoes what a lot of people around here are feeling, that there is no actual representation. There is no conversation. Sure, it gets contentious. You know, people will interrupt. People will shout. That's part of the process. And if you're afraid of that, you shouldn't be in it. You shouldn't be representing people if you don't know how to represent them. The only thing Nick DeLotta seems to know how to do is just echo whatever Donald Trump tells him. And, you know, he'll spread these fictions that somehow he's winning these concessions for Long Island. All he's doing is kicking the can down the road. You know, that whole tax thing that he is heralding, that he supposedly...
Salt?
Yeah, salt. I almost said star. It's salt. Yeah, salt. It's basically something
state
that...
State and local tax.
Trump instituted this in his first term, where basically it limits the amount that people can deduct of taxes they pay, and it limits the amount they can deduct on their income tax to, I think it's, what was it, $10,000? And Nick LaLotta basically claims that he got it to go up to $40,000, which, you know, there might be some element of truth that he had something to do with that, but the point is he didn't get it to stay there. He only got it to go up temporarily. It's going to go right back down. And probably as soon as Nick LaLotta is out of office. So then the blame can go to whoever succeeds him. And that seems to be a Republican tactic, you know? Just mess things up enough, but wait until, you know, they're out of office before the effects actually get felt. And that way they can blame the Democrats, who undoubtedly will take over at some point. So, yeah, that's a little bit of activism, local activism. Some other local activism has to do with Zohran Mamdani, the leading candidate in the New York City mayoral race. Long Islanders most recently donated more money to back Democratic mayoral nominee Zohran Mamdani than for all his opponents combined. Yeah, I was surprised by that. Long Islanders. That's according to a Newsday analysis of the race's latest fundraising. The haul from Long Islanders for Mamdani, who is an assembly member from Astoria, was $104,079. Not a whole lot. I mean, when you count up what these politicians are dealing with. But still, that's it's significant. That's donations from July 12th to August 18th. The donations were disclosed by law to New York City's Campaign Finance Board. You know, it's funny to see people freaking out over this guy leading in the race in New York City. And you know, they're saying crazy things like, my God, there's going to be a communist leading New York City. Okay, first of all, even if that were true, and you know, it's got me thinking, yeah, he's not a communist, he's a socialist. There's a difference. But, you know, being a communist is not the worst thing in the world. You know, being a dictator, that's the worst thing in the world. Being an authoritarian, they don't necessarily go hand in hand. They do more often than I would prefer, and communism is not something I embrace, but it's not the boogeyman you think that communism is. I've had many good conversations with people who are avowed communist. Never had a good conversation with a fascist. Not one. There's a difference. There's a big difference. Right now we have fascists running the show in D.C. That's a problem. Much bigger problem than a guy slightly left of center who might win the New York City mayoral race. If he wins, he wins. That's what the people want. And we all need to stop freaking out over it. What we should be freaking out over is what's going to be happening with COVID this fall. According to this Newsday story, CVS is going to be requiring prescriptions for vaccines. You know, everything has been made so much more difficult now under Trump and under Robert Kennedy, who should not be anywhere near a healthcare decision. But unfortunately, he is the one driving policy right now. And part of that policy is to make it harder to get vaccines, to make it harder even to get tests. You should be able to just order tests and see if you had COVID. You can't do that anymore. You have to pay for them. You have to pay for all these tests, and a lot of people aren't going to do that. A lot of people are going to find it difficult to get vaccines. Vaccines that save lives. Millions of lives were saved by these vaccines. Now, you can say, oh, COVID's over, it's in the past, but you're fooling yourself. It's still out there. People are still getting it. And the only reason we're not seeing a death rate like we saw in 2000, and we seem to forget that we saw a death rate of stupendous numbers in this country and throughout the world in 2000. Something Republicans want you to forget. And they want to treat the whole thing as if we had all the answers in 2000, and somehow Democrats, who weren't even running the country then, knew this and acted against people's best interests. It's nonsense. But right now, it's going to be difficult to get a vaccine. And we could spiral back into that. Because when vaccines stop working, when you don't get boosters, guess what happens? You start getting sick again. All this talk about let people make up their own minds. Well, they're not letting people make up their own minds here, are they? They're saying that if you're not sick or elderly, you don't qualify. What kind of nonsense is that? You don't qualify for a vaccine that you want to get? It's like we're in a fight against logic. We're in a fight against science. You know? I mean, Trump right now is punishing countries that aren't acting properly on the issue of climate change. Now, if I say that sentence with anybody else in it, it would mean that he's punishing countries that aren't taking it seriously. But in Trump's case, when I say he's punishing countries that aren't seeing eye to eye with him on climate change, it means he's punishing the countries that are taking it seriously. He wants countries to burn more fossil fuel. He wants countries to pollute more. He wants solar energy and wind turbines torn down. Doesn't want to approve any of that. Why? You don't need a reason. He just wants to do that. Basically because his profits are affected. Doesn't make enough money off of solar, off of wind. It doesn't matter. What he says goes. And we're supposed to fall in line. It's sickening. So yeah, get in good with your doctor. If he can write you a prescription for a COVID vaccine, you're in. Otherwise, might have to go to Canada or somewhere else. All right, today, boy, this was something. You know, I don't look at Twitter often. I look at it for amusement. And today, Elon Musk got back into rare form. Calling for the deportation of a Boston imam over a controversial sermon. Actually, I have the, if my phone cooperated, I have the actual, I have the tweet here. Basically, Abdullah Farouk said this: "What's wrong with you sick white Americans? Go back to Europe because you've done nothing but cause hell in this country and all over the world. This is the land of the coward and home of the slave. Without Islam, America will meet its demise." It's fiery. Yes, I'll admit that. It's not something I agree with, but it's no different than a Christian fundamentalist. The things we hear all the time and just turn a blind eye to or even embrace. Anyway, Elon Musk's response to this was, "Kick him out of the country. You moron, he was born in Boston." Okay, so good luck with that. But if you follow all the conversations that took place after that statement by Elon Musk, you will find some of the most ugly, horrible statements about Muslims that used to be something that got you kicked off Twitter. And now it's something that is embraced. It's I don't advise going down this this path, which unfortunately I can't seem to bring up anymore because I hate my phone. But Kyle, I showed you some of them before. You saw them.
Yeah, a lot of like slogans and just
where the hell did they go?
Photoshop stuff or whatever.
I think my phone updated with all the new racist slogans that were put up there. Yeah, They're gone. Well, at least the good news is I can turn my volume off on my phone now.
But just a lot about like Islam being evil or something.
Yeah, it was, you know, as
just these like really broad generalizations.
Just hatred, pure hatred. Islam is evil, plain and simple. All Muslims need to be deported now. Things you just would not expect to have tolerated. And now it is being embraced. Like you would not believe. Oh, well. So I won't read that. But yeah, that's what Elon Musk is up to now. Just basically spreading hatred, racism, Islamophobia. And, you know, if somebody had made one of those comments about Jews, oh, my God. The kind of reaction, it would be on the floor of Congress. It would be the headline in the news. But because it's Muslims, we just we ignore it. Sickening. So anyway, that's one of many things that's going on now. Washington State has had some issues. According to the Seattle Times, two people who are fighting the Bear Gulch fire on the Olympic Peninsula were arrested by federal law enforcement last Wednesday in a confrontation described by firefighters depicted in photos and video. And guess who arrested them? It was ICE. ICE actually interfered with these guys who are fighting a fire to conduct one of their raids, you know, masks and all that. Border Patrol operation on the fire. It's utterly sickening what is going on. Firefighters requested anonymity because they feared retaliation from federal agencies for talking to the media. I'm going to read that again and tell yourself this is America 2025. The firefighters requested anonymity because they feared retaliation from federal agencies for talking to the media. Federal law enforcement asked, yeah, that's a good one, to line up to check their IDs, according to the firefighters. One of the firefighters said members of the crew were told not to take video of the incident. Yeah, big middle finger to you. You can record whatever is going on in front of you. One firefighter said, "You risk your life out here to save the community. This is how they treat us." In a FaceTime video call from a firefighter to the Seattle Times, firefighters in their gear were seen sitting on logs in front of federal officers. Some firefighters were dismissed back to their vehicles. One firefighter attempted to walk over to his company vehicle to get something to drink and appeared to have been called back by federal officers. According to one of the firefighters, they were even denied the chance to say goodbye to the detained crew members. I asked them if his family could say goodbye to him because they're family and they're just ripping them away. And this is what he said. "You need to get the expletive out of here. I'm going to make you leave." We need to make these people leave. This is not what any of us signed up for. These masked thugs terrorizing people. You know, I think everybody who felt there was a crisis of immigration thought the way it was going to be dealt with was get the people out who are causing problems, who are committing crimes. These are people literally fighting fires. And this is how they are treated. Kids are being yanked out of school. You know, there was an airplane filled with Guatemalan kids, unaccompanied kids, that was being deported without any clear indication of where they were expected to go. Fortunately, it was stopped by a middle of the night court order. But what kind of barbarity are we dealing with here? It gets worse, because it always does. Legal experts say charges against Afghanistan war veteran Bajun Mavawala mark an escalation in the Trump administration's crackdown on First Amendment rights. The arrest of a U.S. Army veteran who protested against the Trump administration's immigration crackdown, has raised alarms among legal experts and fellow veterans familiar with his service in Afghanistan. I should point something out here. Bajun Mavawala, he's an American. Yeah, he's an American. He is not somebody who is being deported. No. He is somebody who's being arrested for protesting. He's a former Army sergeant. He survived a roadside bomb blast on a special operations mission in Afghanistan. He was charged with conspiracy to impede or injure officers after joining a demonstration against federal immigration and customs enforcement in Spokane, Washington. Legal experts say the case marks an escalation in the administration's attacks on First Amendment rights. Afghanistan war veterans who know him say the case against him appears unjust. Here is a guy who held a top secret clearance and was privy to some of the most sensitive information we have, who served in a combat zone, said Kenneth Koop, a retired colonel who trained the Afghan military and police during Mavawala's deployment. To see him treated like this really sticks in my craw. The protest on June 11th against ICE that led to his arrest was confrontational, leaving a government van's windshield smashed and tires slashed. But Mavawala was not among the more than 24 people arrested at the scene. And more than a month passed before the FBI arrived at his door in July. The 35-year-old, who used his GI Bill to earn a degree in sustainable communities from Sonoma State University, was set to move into a 3,000-square-foot house that day, which he had bought with his girlfriend, a nurse and fellow Afghanistan war veteran, with the help of a loan backed by the Department of Veteran Affairs. Mavawala's father, a retired U.S. Army intelligence officer with three Bronze Stars that were earned during tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, brought his truck for the occasion. He planned to move his son into a dream home in the southern section of Spokane that was large enough to accommodate their blended family and solidify the couple's life together. But at 6 a.m., the FBI pounded on Mavawala's door and arrested him. Cell phone video shot by his father show the veteran, tall, fit, with wire-rimmed glasses, tight ponytail, trim goatee, smiling in apparent disbelief, his hands shackled behind his back. "This is not how I plan to spend my moving day," he said. "I'm a military veteran. I'm an American citizen." This kind of thing is so disgusting. This guy arrested simply for participating in a demonstration, not accused of being disruptive or violent. They're not going to stop with the deportations. They're coming after all of us who dare to speak up. And I have seen such fear from so many people who have something to lose. You know, whether it's a spouse who is not from this country or a relative who is particularly vulnerable. We all have something that we're afraid of losing. And they will play on that. And that's how they get you to do what they want. Meanwhile, Trump is marching in to cities across the country. Is this enough for you yet? I mean, at what point do people say, okay, that's it. I'm done with this. I'm going to do something about it. Because it just seems to me like we keep reporting these stories. And everyone just keeps saying, oh boy, that's something, isn't it? What's it going to be next week? It's not funny. We're going to lose democracy, any kind of control of our country. It's going to turn into an authoritarian dictatorship where it's normal to have troops in the streets of our cities. Right now, that's happening in Washington, D.C. And Trump can get away with that for 30 days because Washington, D.C. is federalized. Basically, it's different from other cities. Fine. But now he's trying for Chicago. He promised a federal crackdown on crime in Chicago. Now, keep in mind, crime is down. crime is down in Chicago. You can point to crimes. You know, it's very easy to get somebody to say that that crime is out of control by pointing to a crime that just happened. But if you look at all the crime that's been happening, it's down, and that's not insignificant. That means something. It means it's better now than it was a year ago. So you can't really say it's spiraling out of control. It's unacceptable the way it is, sure. But it's not getting worse. It's getting better. So maybe keep doing whatever it is that's making it get better, rather than introduce this whole new variable of bringing troops in. What is that going to do exactly? You know, there are just more people with guns on the street. And that's the problem. Guns on the street. Where are those guns coming from? Well, in Illinois, they're coming from Indiana. That's a red state. Don't see any troops there. All the guns that are being brought in to places that have laws against them. Well, that's where I would start investing some attention. Of course, this regime is not doing that. So basically, he said, we're going in. He did not offer any details on timing. His administration has been working on plans to deploy hundreds of Homeland Security officers to the city for immigration enforcement. I just wonder how people are going to respond to this. New York is also in the bullseye here. How are New Yorkers going to accept armed troops walking around their streets? About the worst thing that can happen is that we all accept it and say, yeah, this is fine. This is normal. Because I guarantee you, it doesn't go the other way. You change something like that, it stays that way. I'm sorry, I'm dominating, Kyle. But there's an awful lot going on. I mean, wow.
I can't help but think about a lot of the people that do stand up. I mean, when you hear about stories or someone just holding a sign or some act of defiance, I'm always heartened in some way, and I respect it, even if it's, you know, not the perfect way to protest. There's no perfect way. A lot of us, I think, just don't have the answers. We don't have the answers. A lot of it's being done quickly. And some people are rising to the moment. They're realizing and speaking up and doing what they can to make to draw attention, to make people understand, to make people hear them. And I have a great sense of reverence for that act, and I'm always open and impressed and proud that people don't put up with things when against all odds, against huge domineering forces, people stand in opposition. They even if it's not the popular point of view, it means something. And often, you know, that has been a situation where I disagree with what they're saying, but they still should show up and be heard. And yeah, we can't all be saying the right thing. And I think a lot of us feel like we don't have the answers to any number of the issues that you're talking about. It's not on us to have those answers necessarily. There's so many parts of this that reflect a broken system or a series of different societal things that have changed so suddenly and upended what we'd considered sort of normal, I think, in the polarized politics and a lot of the different things that are going on. So, yeah, do what you can out there. I think that's what's most important. I don't think we're all going to have the right answer at any one time. But
that's the thing.
A lot of it is people saying, okay, well, this is what America wanted.
No, and it's I know not. That's not. It's not what America wanted. I guarantee you this is not what America wanted.
But don't you get, like, there's like a sense of like a people kind of like wanting it to be bad, like not a defeatism.
Yes,
but like
there is that.
Like a self, like we want it to appear bad. We want it to be uncomfortable so that people understand how bad of a direction
that's a leftist tactic that I've always had problems with. Let's see how bad things can get. Then people will see that
we were right all
yeah. along. And okay, so then what do you do? You go back in time and have the election again? No, you have to fight these things. You have to get people on your side. You can't be minimizing the amount of people that you join up with. You know, I was agreeing with Marjorie Taylor Greene the other week. That was uncomfortable for me. But, you know, at some point, you're going to find yourself pairing up with people that you disagree with on 90% of other things to get that 10% changed. And then you move on and you do other things and you keep winning victories. I don't think we know how to win. I don't think we know how to fight these battles. You know, we're just sitting back and watching them all happen and say, oh, now this is going to happen. The Supreme Court is going to back them up. Okay, but, you know, I guarantee you 100,000 people surrounding the Supreme Court is going to affect the way they make decisions. It absolutely will. We see it in other countries. When we see it in other countries, we cheer those other countries for standing up for democracy. Are we too cowed to do that? Are we afraid of our own government so much that we won't even stand up and say, no, we're not going to take this? You know, they're coming here. It's not like we have to go to D.C. They're coming into our cities. And, you know, troops, this is not a fake sentence here. Troops from red states are marching into blue state cities or cities that are blue. You know, it sounds absurd. But that is what is happening. Conservative National Guards people are being sent into cities. They have no familiarity. Oftentimes, they have no training on how to be the equivalent of a cop. It's a recipe for disaster. It absolutely is a recipe for disaster. And if we don't fight it, if we don't physically prevent this from happening, I can't even imagine how bad it's going to get. It's I'm not completely surprised. I think if I'm surprised by anything, it's by the lack of reaction. Sure, there's been reaction. There've been people saying things on C-SPAN, people shouting a little bit, you know, saying this is outrageous, but you know, we had that No Kings Day. Boy, that was good. Is that all we get one day? That should be every day. And if it were every day, this wouldn't be happening. This is only happening because we're letting it happen. And I think people forget the power they have. You know, all we have to do is come together and agree on simple things. Do you want troops marching in the streets of New York City? Do you want that? If you do, you know what? Fine. Tune to another station. But I think most people listening right now don't care for that. And I think if you go to any other city in this country, you'll get that reaction far and away. Yeah, so that's where we stand on that.
I think this public health guidance is definitely something that is more concerning. It's that hits home, you know. It's like your personal health is willfully being jeopardized by the opinions of people that do not believe in science in the same way that a lot of the public has come to understand it post-pandemic. And that, to me, is across the board, I think, sort of an apolitical thing. When you're coming down to human health, and there's enough of the other sorts of incompetence on display that people realize, like, wow, we really are on our own. Like, we've got to get serious and get out there, get the right kind of leadership instead in places we can look to if we can't trust and count on the traditional sources in this particular regime.
This guy, Mayor Brandon Johnson of Chicago, he's actually pretty impressive. He called on Trump to do more about the flow of illegal guns into Chicago from those states with looser firearm restrictions. We mentioned Indiana. We don't have an immigration crisis in Chicago, he said. We have a gun crisis. Do your job and end the trafficking of guns into our city. Senator Richard Durbin of Illinois, speaking on the Senate floor, said that if Trump sent the National Guard into Chicago, it would be an unconstitutional abuse of power and a political spectacle. It'll be a lot more of a spectacle than that. Using the military to occupy an American city in the absence of an emergency politicizes the institution, erodes civilian control of the armed forces, and places unnecessary burdens on service members, families, and employers. Governor Pritzker of Illinois warned that the Trump administration planned to have unidentifiable agents in unmarked vehicles with masks raid Latino communities in Chicago, detaining people on their way to work or while taking their children to school. None of this is about fighting crime or making Chicago safer, he said. It's all a big show. And, you know, you have these masked thugs in unmarked cars grabbing people off the street. At what point do you believe they are actually law enforcement? Already, right-wing militias are having fake raids, you know, basically where this has happened at least once, where they go after somebody, claim to be from a particular organization, but since they have masks on and they don't have any identifying documentation of any sort, how do you prove they're not? You don't. You just have to believe them. So this is a boon for masked thugs out there because all they have to do is put on their masks and go crazy. That's what we've devolved to. So the only way to deal with this is to treat everybody who is unmasked in unmarked cars and claiming to be law enforcement to believe they are lying. And until they show ID of one sort or another, they must be treated as criminals. Now, that's different in different states. I'm surprised it hasn't come to this already. But what do you expect people to do? You know, this has never happened before. This is new to us. The mayor of Washington, D.C., Muriel Bowser, issued an order today outlining how the district's newly created Safe and Beautiful Emergency Operations Center, what the hell, would manage the relationship between D.C. and the Trump administration with hundreds of federal law enforcement agents on the ground. The Operations Center will communicate the district's request to the administration, the mayor's office said, including that law enforcement officers not wear masks and clearly identify themselves. That's a step. The seizure of people off district streets by masked agents, presumably working in immigration enforcement, has prompted widespread criticism from residents and local officials. In a post on social media, the White House press secretary praised the mayor for working with the administration, saying that fellow Democrats should take note. Okay, it's really, really hard to interpret this. I mean, they're praising the mayor of Washington for being nice. But the mayor of Washington is also requesting, demanding something, that they not act the way they've been acting. Are they going to do that? I have my doubts. Trump wants to call the Defense Department the War Department again. Yeah, it was called the War Department up until shortly after World War II. Can you imagine that? The War Department? I mean, it just, wow. Bounces right off the tongue, doesn't it? Yeah, Trump said the name War Department just sounded better. I think we're going to have to go back to that. Why? Why exactly do we have to go back to that? He said it was a reminder of the country's record of victories in conflicts under the old name, citing World Wars I and II, and not much after that. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth told Mr. Trump the change was coming soon. In June, Trump claimed the title of War Secretary had been changed to Defense Secretary to be more politically correct. But that was a long, long time ago before political correctness even was a thing. the next month in a post on Truth Social, praising Mr. Hegseth, the president called him the Secretary of War. The president and Hegseth have been eager to promote a more aggressive image of the military and cut back on rules that restrict its operations. Remember when Trump was running on the notion that he was a president for peace and that it was Biden getting us into wars? And now he literally wants a war department. And he's basically stoking up confrontation throughout the globe, claiming credit for solving all these problems for places that he can't even find on a map. I mean, right now you have the leaders of China, the leaders of India, the leaders of Russia, and even North Korea teaming up because they're fed up with what Trump is doing. And these are not the people that you want running things, but he's basically giving them the key to the kingdom. All right, we're just about out of time. I wish I could be a bit more positive and uplifting. But if you look at what's going on in the world, it's really hard to do that. The important thing, the most uplifting I can be, is to say we all have power. We all have a voice. It's up to us whether or not we decide to use it. And I think the implications for not using our voices are pretty clear, pretty stark, and well-defined by history. So let's all get up off our asses and basically, I didn't mean it literally, Kyle, basically save this thing before it gets even worse. And God knows what we'll be reporting on next week. OTW at 2600.com is our email address. This is Emmanuel, and that's Kyle.
Standing on the airwaves.
Yes, indeed. See you next week in a better place, I hope.
Bye!
This is nice and uplifting, too.
The memories of a man in his old age are the deeds of a man in his prime. You shuffle in the gloom of the sick room and talk to yourself as you die. And life is a short, warm moment, and death is a long, cold rest. You get your chance to try in the twinkling of an eye, 80 years with luck or even less. So all aboard for the American tour, and maybe you'll make it to the top. But mind how you go, and I can tell you, cause I know you may find it hard to get off. Shuffle it.